Welcome to another episode of Osei Can You See? A television show dedicated to confronting the empire, which is currently led by the United States. This past weekend was an amazing occurrence. Tens of millions of people all around the world came out onto the street, unified against the war being planned by the emperor in his shabby clothes. 2 to 3 million people in Rome, 1 to 2 million people in London, Athens, Berlin, 1 million people in New York, in 600 cities or more across the United States. How did all this come about? It seems like a big surprise, right? Well, that's not true. The marches demonstrate the power of international organizing. The idea for a February 15 day of action emerged from the European Social Forum in November. It spread worldwide through the internet and then through the World Social Forum at the end of January in Porto Alegre, Brazil. At the third World Social Forum, there were meetings of the leaders and activists from anti-war movements around the globe to set up a coordination of action that was all too evident this past weekend. So the question is, what the heck is this World Social Forum and the European Social Forum? How did they manage to organize this incredible resistance? I'll tell you. It is a remarkable group of movements, constituencies, activists, and projects from all around the globe, linked by an open and experimental attitude, a commitment to participation, feelings of mutual respect, and attention to diversity and democracy, all celebrating the sentiment that another world is possible. In 2002, at the second World Social Forum, roughly 50,000 participants began to enunciate features that better world might have. The most widely shared sentiments were rejection of markets and support for self-management, rejection of vast differentials in income and support for equity, rejection of homogenizing commercialism and support for diversity, rejection of imperial arrogance and support for solidarity, and the rejection of ecological devastation and the support for sustainability. No doubt the World Social Forum 2003, which just took place, will have taken this agenda many steps further. Now, obviously it did, because the World Social Forum and the European Social Forum and the social forums in general were managed, along with a lot of other people and other groups, to put together this world-shattering, world-shaking demonstration of unity all around the world of tens of millions of people in the street. And that's our subject for tonight's show, is the World Social Forum, the social forums in general, the sometimes called the movements of movements, or I call it the people's think tank. Tonight, we have the auspicious return of, on my right here, Frank Girard, Comrade Frank. He's one of the founding members of the Society for Economic Equality, that this show branched off from, and it's great to have him back on the show. And on my left, we have Red Professor Ed, who's been around also. I don't know. Were you one of the original members, Ed, of the
of CTV?
Yeah.
No, I was not. I wasn't a founding member of anything.
So now we. Before giving opening comments, I just wanted to go back to those pictures that, while I was reading, that came up there. Those lots of red flags in those pictures. And a commentary, my own commentary, look at all those red flags about the war that's currently being waged by the Empire, being planned by the Empire. Aside from being a war about oil and the basic hegemony that they wish to extend, you know, to make everything exactly the same everywhere so that they can profit from it, another conscious reason for the war being pursued at this time was to derail the world movement, which is solidified after Seattle. And it worked for a while. I mean, there was a terrorist attack in New York City, the World Trade Center, and people got scared, and the resistant movements all around the world were shocked and quieted. And for a while, there was not very much resistance going on. But once again, people worldwide are waking up to the trauma, the horror, and the anti-democratic character of capitalism. The meanings of social justice are being redefined right now. The language corporate globalization and empire and life after capitalism are becoming more common, and they show a rising consciousness. The paths and options that we all face are being debated and measured again. Old forms are being reconsidered and sometimes rejected. New forms advance, sometimes facing failure, but in spirit of diversity and solidarity. And factionalism on the left is being overcome. And so tonight, that's what we're going to try to address. Some questions, and we're going to take calls from the home, the viewers at home, all night tonight. So you want to make an introductory comment, Frank?
Well, what I wanted to comment on was the fact that this World Social Forum is a kind of response to something that the capitalist class is a forum of the capitalist class. It's called the World Economic Forum, and it's in Davos, Switzerland, or it was in Davos, Switzerland, about the same time as the World Social Forum. And this is an economic forum, and as Noam Chomsky pointed out, he called it a gathering of the, how did he put it, the masters of the universe, the masters of the universe, 3,000 of them, invited to attend and discuss what's important to them. And what's important to them, of course, is keeping us quiet. That's A. And secondly, maximizing profits. I would think that's probably B. Okay? And so this World Social Forum is a kind of a response to that. Instead of 3,000 invited guests, why, there are 100,000, we understand, people who attended this and talked about our problems. And our problems are a little bit different. We're not trying to maximize profit, and we're not trying to keep anybody quiet. What we're trying to do is, or what they were trying to do, rather, is network, get to know each other. This is pretty important when you're talking about a globe in which there are, what, hundreds of languages. So there's that part of it, a gathering of people from all over the globe, and a gathering of people who themselves are experiencing hard times and serious problems, whether we're talking about women and women's issues, whether we're talking about the environment, whether they're talking about what has become a kind of global, I don't know how to describe it, a disease, I guess, would be of unemployment. The last figure I heard for the total unemployment of the globe, people who are living in this time, not getting income enough to buy food, 1.5 billion people. 1.5 billion people unemployed. It's amazing, isn't it? You stop to think about it. And if you stop to think about what can be done in a one-world global capitalism with 1.5 billion unemployed people, think of when we think of the idea of competition, of the price of labor when there's an excess of 1.5 billion people. That would suggest that that the wages, the standard of living of everybody is going to go down. And this is something that I'm sure the World Social Forum considered. And it's something we and you ought to consider also. In fact, it's happening right here, isn't it? When they talk about the budget and what schools are going to have to close, when they're closing schools, when they're cutting back on teachers, when they're cutting back on food for the old folks, you know who it is they're cutting back on? It's we, the poor, the working class. That's who's getting it in the neck. You think somebody else wants to talk now? I've used up my time, I think. But anyhow, you get the picture.
Thanks. Do you like to make any introductory comments, Ed, on the World Social Forum and the social forum phenomenon in general?
Only perhaps one, and I hate to be a naysayer, but to balance your optimism, I do have this impression. When the rulers, if you wish, but the economic power, the leaders with economic power, meet in Switzerland, they don't protest. And by power, I mean the capacity to realize one's will despite resistance. Now, protest is a vehicle of those who don't have power to have their voices heard. And at this point, I just want to remind you, John, that protesting the system is not in itself an exercise of power. You're not realizing your will despite the resistance of the capitalists. On the other hand, I am optimistic in that if people can see that their problems are global and begin to identify with the problems of other peoples, with other languages, other cultures, the destruction of those cultures, in that sense, the groundwork is being laid here for achieving power through various ways. But the meetings themselves are laying the groundwork. Mm-hmm. But they haven't realized any change yet. And that's going to be a long, arduous struggle. And the problem is that with wealth goes power. Mm-hmm. Those who have wealth hire cadres of propagandists, we call them public relations people, they hire full-time lobbyists. They hire people to fight their battles for them. And at the same time, the many, the poor, the average, have to devote their own time, their own resources. And this is obviously a handicap. The one thing, however, that the many have are their numbers. And if they could realize democratic reforms which would allow us to begin to control this capitalist beast, if you wish, then you can begin to see the kind of reforms that are necessary and the kind of steps that have to be taken. I just am raising that point, mm-hmm. that a large forum in itself is a sign of, yes, things could happen in terms of concrete change, but it doesn't mean that will happen.
Right.
So I guess I'm trying to moderate my pessimism.
Thanks. I appreciate that because I'd like this to be as optimistic as possible in a world that breeds pessimism and Well, at this point, I want to open up the phone lines before getting back. I was going to comment on what you said, Ed. But there we go. You can call in at 459-4881 with comments about the World Social Forum, especially if you happen to went down there, or if you've been in any social forum or local ones. I haven't heard of any happening in Michigan, but they might be out there. I'd love to hear it. And especially if you happen to know about South America and the issues that are down there. If you speak Spanish or Portuguese, you come from down there, and you could enlighten us and the viewers, other viewers at home. Before the show, we were trying to come to some understanding of why the World Social Forum happened in South America and down in Brazil. And there's a general agreement among us that it's because there's a lot of ferment down there, but it's not something that we have a depth of knowledge about. But we'll talk a little bit about it. But if you at home could call in, if you have knowledge, that would be much appreciated. We already have a caller. Ted is on the line. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes. Okay, good deal. Do you gentlemen consider yourselves socialists?
For myself, I think we're all different here. I consider myself, I don't consider myself an anarchist. I support anarchism. The other two can speak for themselves.
I regard myself as a libertarian socialist, which is
about the same thing. That's what Noam Chomsky.
I've heard a lot of comments like anti-profit and anti-markets, and I don't know. I think that war of ideas has already been waged, and I believe the socialist side lost that. And it seems like we need to move on and quit demonizing free markets and capitalism. And I know it has worked. I'm not defending rabid, rampant, devil take the hindmost capitalism.
Then you don't support capitalism, because that's what capitalism is.
Capitalism is an evolutionary stage in human development. And I think that it has to transform itself into something more far-sighted, more compassionate, more humanistic.
Yeah.
However, I think history has proven that centralized economies, A, don't work, and tend to foster an evil, for lack of a better word. I mean, you look at the fascist states, you look at the communist states, they were absolutely abhorrent in terms of their civil rights and human rights records. So I think it's time for us to move the argument down the field a bit. And when we get hung up on this anti-profit, anti-free market, it doesn't further the debate. I think that debate has already been waged, both intellectually and practically in the real world, and you guys lost. So I think you guys maybe need to open a newspaper and or maybe read some history and realize that you people are on the fringe.
May I respond?
Sure, please.
I think that perhaps you ought to do some studying of socialism and capitalism. What lost was another form of capitalism, state capitalism. Soviet Union had everything that capitalism has. They had a ruling class, they had a political state, it had a monetary system, it had a wages system, it was simply a kind of state capitalism run from the center, like a great big corporation, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics Incorporated.
So it was free market driven. The Soviet Union had a market driven economy.
What we need is a socialist, decentralized socialism. But I'll tell you, I'm curious about how you would humanize a greed system like capitalism. How do you humanize an inhuman system?
Well, you begin with a rational debate, and calling the Soviet Union a market-driven economy immediately puts you in la-la land. There's no way to debate with you if you hold that position.
You're right, it wasn't.
I mean, seriously.
Ted, you're right that it wasn't a market-driven economy, but it was a...
I didn't say it was.
Well, you said it was a capitalistic...
Well, there's a difference between something being capitalistic...
And what would that
and,
mean?
...and being market.
Okay, let's isolate that. Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, Ted, I tell you, we have another caller here, and we weren't planning on debating socialism versus capitalism on this show.
But
we were talking about...
Your commentary is laced with anti-capitalism, anti-profit, anti-free market rhetoric, and then when you're called on it, you say, well, that's not what we want to debate. Then quit taking the cheap shots.
Well, the commentary...
I'm not trying to rain on your parade. I'm really
Ted,
not.
You sure had a chance to express your views.
Thanks for your call, Ted. Thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
We're going to go to our next caller, Rick, who is on the line. Rick, you have a comment or question or anything about the World Social Forum or the movement of movements?
Well, first of all, I'm glad to see Frank on the panel again. It's good to see his smiling socialist face, an unabashed socialist, one who was not afraid to say so. And just to follow up on the last caller there, Frank, one thing you neglected to mention was that Lenin himself said that the form of system they were going to have there in the Soviet Union was, in fact, state capitalism.
That's what he said he was trying to build.
And as you so eloquently mentioned, if you have a system where you got to go in and punch a time clock, or you got to be there at a certain time, and you got to take a check from an employer, and you work at his pleasure, et cetera, et cetera, and the person also mentioned the fascists and the Nazis. And as you know, Frank, Nazism and fascism is capitalism unabashed. And I frankly think that, and I know John will disagree with me here, but I think the real capitalism that would be totally untrammeled would be anarchism of a certain sort, because then there's no rules whatsoever, and that's where the strong survive, of course. And a purely anarchistic system could not even last, because once everything broke down and you had the law of the jungle, someone would have to take a strong hand. And of course, that's exactly what happened in Germany.
Well, Rick, I think your misconceptions about anarchism are equal to Ted's misconceptions about capitalism.
Well, they're both bad. And I think what we have to have is the libertarian socialism that Frank espouses. And he didn't tell me to say this either. I'm just agreeing with him. And, John and Frank, you all have good ideas here. I just think that the way to really battle this evil of capitalism is to talk about a socialist system, and a libertarian one at that, where the people actually rule, which means you don't have communist commissars, you don't have Rich DeVos's and Van Andels, you don't have George Bush's or Leonid Brezhnev's. You have the people actually controlling the means of production, and you produce for need and not for profit. I think if the left would coalesce around that simple message, rather than getting all upset about war and sexism and racism and all the rest of this stuff, and just focus on the economic problem, that's where the battle really has to be fought.
Okay. And Ed wants to say something. I just wanted to mentioned that at the World Social Forum and other social forums that are coalescing around the world, the economic struggle that you mentioned is more and more becoming front and center.
That's
and,
good.
And I think that's important. But at the same time, I don't think it serves anybody's unity and solidarity to denigrate whatever oppression they happen to be suffering, that they perceive themselves to be suffering most directly. And if that means that they're coming at it from a feminist point of view or an environmental point of view or a peasant point of view as opposed to a worker's point of view, to say to them, get with the program or out the door, is just to break up the left. And I don't think that's what you were suggesting, but...
Well, no, I think the left is multifaceted, but I guess my point is, unless you for instance, I think a lot of this stuff like sexism and racism is pretty much dilettantes of the left who are middle class and have the time to worry about these things. And the main thing is, if you don't have a roof over your head and enough food to eat, you can't be worried about these other things. You've got to deal with the basic necessities of life, which are food, clothing, and shelter for yourself and your family, and these other things are important and worthy of debate. But, you know, first things first.
Uh-huh. Well, I can see that why being white, male, and middle class, you would think that. But...
I'm not middle class. I'm not middle class. I think all you guys have more money than I do.
Hey, I'm middle class.
I'm not.
In the world, situation of the world, with 1.5 billion people completely destitute, we're all middle class.
Yeah, but wait a second.
But Ed wanted to say something, if I'm not wrong.
Well, in a way, the caller is right, but the issues, I think you have to realize that with capitalism, there were some reforms, and therefore I may sound like a moderate here, but there were reforms that occurred in the past, and as somebody so well stated about 30 years ago, there was a one-sided class war in America had begun. And since then, global economics have been utilized to take back, if you wish. In fact, corporate leaders talk about take back in terms of relationships with employees. Health care, pensions, etc., these would be reduced. And I think you have to realize that... My thought is also related to Ted's comments, and that is that when he talks about free markets, the markets aren't free in the sense that they are free of control and manipulation. Large corporations dominate markets, they dominate labor markets, and The idea that capitalism produces more is questionable, but more importantly, produces for whom? And when you have this widespread global destitution, when you have 40% of the population of the globe living on less than $2 a day, I'm not sure that in any way you can call global capitalism a success. And I think this is what you're alluding to here. Mm-hmm. And it also, though, has to be recognized that Americans are suffering because global capitalism has successfully been able to lower real wages. By real, I mean taking into account inflation by using global economics. It can be as simple as the threat of closing a plant. It can be, and that certainly is a major way that people have been driven, have made concessions. Increasingly, American companies, of course, seek out. They need resources, and they need labor, and they want to buy both of those cheap. And certainly labor abroad. So I'm just simply saying that if you think capitalism is a success, you have to look at who gets what and how the so-called benefits of capitalism are distributed. And I don't think that one can simply... look at a successful system, it's a global system now, as one that's performing well when there is this fantastic, when we're talking 40% of 6 billion, we are talking about vast numbers of people who have not shared in the benefits of, quote, international capitalism, unquote. I'll stop here. I don't want to make a speech, but capitalism isn't quite the success that the first earlier, caller, Ted, right. Pointed out.
Okay, thanks, Rick, for your call. You're still there, and we do have another caller. They're pouring in. Ed is on the line. Ed, thanks for holding. Do you have a comment or question about the social forum? Movement.
This whole debate to me is just so tired. I mean, you know, this debate's been going on forever,
And
which debate are you talking about?
The debate about centrally planned versus free market economy.
I don't think you've ever heard anyone on this show advocate central planning, ever. I doubt it very much.
In the absence of individual choice, how on earth are you going to organize a modern techno-industrial economy?
Well, the techno-industrial economy is not organized by individual choice right now by any means. It's done by small groups of individuals who make decisions, you could call it conspire, in order to further their own
ends. Do you really see yourself as a victim in life? I mean, do you really just feel like totally powerless and
not totally
without any ability to plot your own direction?
No, but with all respect, caller, the topic of tonight's program is not central planning. We're talking about people getting together in social forums in order to discuss ways to better their own lives. If you have some problem...
It's called democracy, and they're kicking you guys out of office left and right. When are you going to wake up? You guys lost. You lost.
Okay, we do have another caller. Thanks for your comments.
Go get Mike.
Hello, Michael. Thanks for your call.
Frank Girard, it's good to see the grand old man of socialism on TV. And isn't it true that, well, first of all, I have to say it's great to turn TV on and see it isn't dominated by one of the four capitalist stations here. And is it true, though, about the turn of the century, what really, really threatened American capitalism was the rise of workers, and it so threatened them that they had to suppress it brutally, the industrial workers of the world. Isn't that, in this country, one of the expressions that workers use to transform the system? And it was so successful that the capitalist state had to savage it. I mean, I hear all the other callers saying you lost and all that. Well, it seems to me that about 1912, 1915, workers in this country came very, very close to achieving some spectacular results. And by World War I, it so scared the American capitalists that they had to take off the gloves and just wholesale smash the IWW and everybody with it. Is that true?
Right here in Grand Rapids.
That's right. That's
right here in River City. He's talking about the furniture factory strikes, aren't you?
I'm talking about the IWW in the sense that what we hear from these other callers is, oh, you've lost, socialism is relevant, and such things like that. But it seems to me that when it, in the form of the IWW, which was probably the most successful expression of working class uprising, that when it became very successful, it was no longer buy this group off or sublimate this group. It was smash them, destroy them, jail them, shoot them. Is that correct?
You know, one of the things that interests me about these people who are applauding the market system is that they and we have only one thing to sell on the market, and that's our ability to work. So we're all competing with each other for jobs. And that's the only thing we've got to sell in the market. The owners of the people who profit from the market, of course, are those who manage to corral a lot of money and corral a lot of stuff.
Okay.
The product of our labor, which they robbed us of.
It seems to be.
But you know what, Michael. This discussion was supposed to be about not about capital and labor or even the labor unions, which are a fascinating subject, but rather the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre. And among the groups that were there, surprisingly enough, was the AFL-CIO. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Did you know about that?
I didn't know about that. I caught the program halfway through, so I heard the one caller, going in, deriding you about losing, and capitalism, all that, and so I didn't get the first part of it, but I was really excited to turn on, and see, oh my God, we're talking about real things here, not about, which bachelor's going out, which bachelorette, those earth-shattering things.
Very true.
Ed?
Well, I'm just reflecting on two previous callers, and the word central planning came up. I'm behind always a caller or two.
Yeah.
But central planning was criticized by two, we weren't talking about central planning, and certainly the two gentlemen on my right, certainly the one on my right as an anarchist, would not be sympathetic to it. But if you want to see the epitome of central planning, look at a corporation.
A corporation.
An international corporation.
Hierarchical, top down, take orders or get out the door.
Exactly. And in
totally
addition,
centrally planned, man.
The word free trade is used when it's most free trade is within units of corporations. You have planning, you have design, perhaps in one country, you have production in another. And what I'm simply suggesting here is that our economy is centrally planned because some of the, many of the large corporations, the international corporations, their total production is more than the gross national product of a number of countries. That is the magnitude you're talking about. There is no democracy in a corporation. And this is where people have their everyday existence. So what I'm suggesting is that in the central area of life, where you spend most of your time in work, there's no democracy. And number two, to criticize centralized planning, even though I'm not enthusiastic about it, is to completely blind yourself to the fact that corporations plan. And they are gigantic economic systems that are integrated. If it doesn't work, then you're saying the American corporate structure doesn't work. If it's inefficient, then American corporations are inefficient. But let's be consistent here. Centralized planning is a central component of this economy.
Of the industrial system.
Of
any industrial
of the scale of corporations today.
And the financial system. I mean, Alan Greenspan isn't the guru, you know, just because he's some side character, equally empowered with all of us. He's considered the guru of the economy because he has the power to make decisions that affect you with no input from you.
There are other callers, but the last point was there's this mythology that they're all, that when we're talking about our markets made up of mom and pop little operations, you know, the little corner store, and they're that mob, therefore, you have businesses start and they die and so on. Well, that's not where the power is. The power is in the large corporations which dominate the world economy.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sure we have other callers.
Well, actually, at this point, I'm getting a little busy there. We're going to take a break. We're going to show a video clip that I have prepared. It's completely off the topic, but except it does come in from what Ed was saying about corporations and where our discussion veered to. So you can enjoy this for the next 2 minutes, and we'll try to get our heads together at this end.
At the beginning of the 20th century, the U.S. Supreme Court warned of, quote, the slavery that would result from aggregations of capital in the hands of a few individuals and corporations controlling for their own profit and advantage exclusively the entire business of the country. Despite that warning, things got worse. Toward the middle of the century, Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis wrote that corporations had such far-reaching control over the lives of workers and the general public that it is appropriate to speak of our corporate system as feudalism or plutocracy, the rule of a few over the many. Despite Brandeis's warning, things got still worse. Now we're beginning a new century, and the juggernaut of corporate capital not only controls our jobs, our elections, our health, our food, our environment, and our culture here at home, but it's rolling across the globe in the form of transnational corporations that manipulate foreign countries and threaten to destroy the planet's capacity to survive for our grandchildren's generation. What went wrong?
Welcome back. What went wrong with the corporations? An intriguing question that we're not tackling tonight. Tonight we're talking about social forums. At the end of January this year, the third World Social Forum happened in Porto Alegre, Brazil. Over 100,000 people participated, and that's a key word. It was a participatory occurrence. Just to give you an idea exactly what happened down there, because we didn't really get into it much, there were over 1,700 different sessions and workshops. That's a big deal. That's a lot of talking going on. That's a lot of democracy in action, people discussing ideas and coming to solutions which suit them. Sometimes there'd be disagreements, I'm sure, between people who come with a market idea, social democrats, and people who are more radical, the anarchists and whatnot. Noam Chomsky was down there, and Arundhati Roy, if I'm pronouncing her name. They were in a joint session, which I heard the audio from, at least in part, and they had over 15,000 people in attendance to listen to their ideas, and they were talking about mainly about confronting the empire and the war on Iraq and such. We have our own little social forum in a way. Every week on Fridays at the Morning Star Cafe in Easttown, we get together to have coffee and rap. We just talk whatever's on our minds.
From
12 to 2. So anybody out there who wants to talk more about any subject that you see on CTV, feel free, of course, to come down. It's a coffee shop, and no one's going to stop you. It's not a centrally planned coffee house, is it? We already have a caller who we're going to take right now. Tim?
Yes,
hello.
Sir.
Hi.
How you doing?
Thanks for your call. Do you have any comments on the World Social Forum or democracy as it's expressed through the social forum movement?
Yes, sir. First, I think you guys tell the truth.
Oh.
You don't.
That's probably unusual for television, right?
You don't beat around the bush, and I appreciate that.
All right.
Okay, a lot of their power started with working through the police and, starting their own groups. Because if you try to fight the system, then they will lock you up. You know what I mean? They will find a reason to silence people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they try, definitely.
But a lot of their origin started with creating their own. I mean, there should be a justice system, yes, but everybody should work together. But if you don't agree with what they say, then they make a criminal element out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what we're all facing.
But I mean, that's their tactics are through making people who disagree with them look guilty. You know what I mean? Pretty much like a in-depth view of it, you know what I mean? I mean, the origin of it anyways. To stomp out people who feel the way that we do, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they marginalize them to make them look like crazies or paranoics. That's
right, they make us look like the guilty party.
Yeah.
You know?
But, that is really amazingly easy to overcome, and it's called getting together with your neighbors.
Yeah,
anytime
right.
You get together, not even on protest, just to get together and talk and
right.
take yourself seriously, take your neighbor seriously, act democratically,
right.
And that paranoia just vanishes so quickly. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to use vulgar force or anything,
Right, you don't need it.
But that's how they gained the power, was working through their own organizations. You know, even though they do the same thing, you know, if this just they want the power over you, you know, the ruling class.
Yeah, for sure.
But, well, I don't myself. I don't think that this is a real problem. If you want to publish something, print it. You know, you can write a letter to the Grand Rapids Press and they'll print it. Simple as that.
Yeah.
We get on this radio station or TV, isn't it?
Right. Times have changed.
TV station, and we're able to talk. You can. I've got a little printing outfit, and I print leaflets when the spirit is on me. There are ways to do it, and if you're worried about people ridiculing you, well, then of course, best not to do it if that bothers you a lot. But never bothered me. Hell with them.
Well, I never paid no attention to capitalist ridicule, because usually if people ridicule, you know, people like us, then they're writing with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't see why they are, because they take half of their paycheck and they tell them, they basically rule their income and whatever else.
When the spirit is on you, Tim, why don't you come down to Morningstar Cafe, right?
Yeah.
Morningstar Cafe.
Can I bring Ken with me?
How sure. By all means, bring Ken with you, too. Okay.
But I just figured that I would call in and share an idea, you know.
Okay.
All right. We appreciate it, too. Ed wants to say something here.
I just wanted to say the obvious, and that is we do have the First Amendment, and one way we keep it viable and alive is using it. So it isn't just that it's to our interest to use the First Amendment, but by exercising free speech, we constantly are revitalizing the sanctity of free speech in that when people speak out, it gives others courage. And in addition, it helps maintain this firm institutionalization of freedom of speech in this country. So what I'm just suggesting is we've got things going for us. I don't think we have to be afraid to speak. We have the First Amendment, and the idea of free speech is sacred in this country, and by practicing it and not being intimidated by the current Attorney General, Ashcroft, we are strengthening freedom of speech, not only for ourselves, but for others. And so enough flag waving, I will stop at this point.
Yeah. At this point, I wanted to give an idea of, we talked about the World Social Forum, some of the other social forums that are in existence. This is from Z Magazine. There's a big protest, people on the streets in Europe, a survey of European social movements. And I'm just wanted to read off some of the names to give you an idea that, you know, everything doesn't break down into Democrat and Republican like we have in the United States. And in fact, people can find a lot of different, axes in which to organize around and empower themselves. Here's one, the first ones are in Italy, just in Italy, the Tutte Bianche, hopefully pronouncing that right. That means the white overalls, that's what they call themselves. Also known as the disobedient, the Movimento.
No need to translate that. Yeah.
Movimento Antagonista.
Asking for trouble, I call it.
Yeah. Movimento Antagonista. Right? Another movement inspired by the ideas of Italian Marxism. It's more conservative than the Tutte Bianca. The Movimento Anarchisto. Obviously anarchists going on there, is decentralized with no structure and deals with problems of totalitarian institutions, psychiatry, ecology, and militarism. It's divided among pacifists, direct actionists, individual actionists, and primitivists. The Movimento Pacifista, that's pacifists, I would guess, Movimento Dia Giordante. I screwed that up. That's a more center-left group of artists, directors, intellectuals, unionists, and judges. Movimento Critical Mass. Now, we have critical mass here in the United States. We have a critical mass here in Grand Rapids, in fact. In Italy, ecology and environmentalism have always been one step behind Northern European countries. The Movimento Critical Mass is trying to change that balance. Moving out of Italy, we have social centers which are popping up. They've been around since the 70s. Social forums. The first social forum was created before Genoa and inspired by the spirit of Porto Alegre. There's a No Border Network in France that deals with immigrant issues. And one of my favorite groups, how much time do we have here? We're getting down here, but I wanted to, is the People's Global Action, the PGA. Well, I'm not going to read off the points that they're in. You can get this magazine if you want, or find it on the web at CNET, because we're getting down in time, and I wanted to let the other members here have their last say. So anything you wanted to say to wrap up, Ed?
Well, despite my earlier pessimism, I still think there's hope, and you can't predict when things will be ripe and ready for change. Look how quickly those who are old enough to remember the environmental movement and how quickly it was able to institutionalize changes, a real force in terms of corporation restraint, although they've been fighting it for years and are having success with this current administration in dismantling environmental protections. I understand that. But it still it gives one heart that I look at various issues, and for a while it looks like it's utterly useless, no awareness in terms of mass consciousness, and then in a short period of time, things change. And certainly the social forums are manifesting an underlying need for change that it could very well surprise us in a year or two. So I guess there's an optimistic side, and I was trying to end on a good note.
Well, thanks.
Not
I appreciate
a
that.
Note of despair. Okay.
Well, I agree with your comment that you don't know what's going to come of it until it happens. Just the fact that people are getting together and talking to me is a positive sign. And something to be excited about.
I think one of the interesting things is the effect the war is going to have on this. When you get millions of people marching together, gathering together to protest something, that in itself is even stronger, I think, than Porto Alegre. Mm-hmm. Because what's happening is these people are very critical about what's going on in one particular element, one particular area. And it would be ironic, wouldn't it, if George Bush's impetus toward war is what creates a kind of late 1960s atmosphere that happened in 1968 in Paris. You remember where the whole thing started in the beginning of the rebellion and rebelliousness of youth? Began. You know, one of the things that, you know, there are obvious differences. For one thing, I think the Vietnam War was fought with drafted soldiers. And I think the universities and colleges became a focus for the SDS and that sort of thing as a result of that. But there are all kinds of other things that are happening. Another thing that's happening now is an economic problem that's just worldwide. Capitalism is in the middle of a worldwide depression. The United States is the last place that it's being hit, but it's being hit very rapidly and very strongly now.
I just read this, are, as a nation, and that's us as taxpayers, are, I believe the number was $47 trillion in debt to the rest of the world. I mean, that's money that we owe as taxpayers to other people in the world. I don't remember ever deciding to give 27 or what, to $47 trillion away.
Crazy. But you know, individual debt is enormous.
Oh, yeah.
So great that that millions of people have their future mortgaged and have all they have to do is lose one income and they're sunk. You know, this we're all in debt. Do you mean 30 seconds?
Yeah, we're done. So thanks for tuning in tonight. We didn't get quite as in-depth into the social forum movement as I'd hoped, but we do appreciate all your phone calls. Send me an email. I think my email was on the screen there, hopefully. And come down to the Morningstar Cafe and join us to debate these issues. Thanks a lot for watching. Good night.
Okay, I see the title. You know, sound is off. We continue.